better off.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 167 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Surovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So won't spend too much time on the Mets this week, to be perfectly honest, because they suck and they aren't very fun to talk about right now.
Boo. That's all I have to say.
They suck. You know, they were swept by the Braves in absolutely brutal fashion, especially the final game of the Braves series was particularly brutal. The Braves came from behind in all three games. The Mets in the early going had had a habit of never scoring first and always fighting from behind, even in games that they won. This was the exact opposite, where they were ahead in all of these Braves games and the Braves came from behind and won them all. And particularly the last one in extra innings was really brutal. I personally, speaking for myself, when the Mets did not score in the top of the 10th, I turned the game off. Because I knew exactly what was going to happen, and it happened that way.
I never turned any of the games on.
Yeah, no, I didn't either. I watched 0 minutes of the
Same
Braves series.
Here.
We did not do our podcast homework.
No. I just didn't have the mental capacity for it. I knew it was only going to end in tears, and I was right. And
it helped that it was just a really busy stretch for me that made it easier.
I just read. I was happier reading.
Yeah, I watched most of the games and regret it. So, yeah. It was not great. And then they went on to lose 2 out of 3 to the Pirates as well. The one game they won.
Mostly they can't pitch, and mostly they can't hit, but certainly never both
at the same time.
Absolutely never.
I mean, they scored enough runs in the Braves series to win those games. You know, they scored 10 runs in the final game and lost anyway. So that's just inexcusable on the part of the pitching staff. I understand that the Braves have a very good offense. I understand this. But on a day when, you know, you tag Spencer Strider for however many runs they scored off Strider of the 10.
I do appreciate that they own Spencer Strider.
I do.
I do like when there is like a really good opposing guy who just the Mets make him blink every time.
Yeah. And this was not the very lucky Mets this time. They really got to Strider this time. No infield hits. In fact, in one of the games, I think it was the Max Scherzer game. In the Max Scherzer game, the Braves had several hits that never left the infield. And I was like, how the turntables? Are we going to talk about how lucky the Braves are now? Because Scherzer, it was a weird outing for Scherzer. He struck out 10 batters, but he gave up 11 hits. But I feel like, don't quote me on this. Don't fact check me. But I feel like half of them were infield hits. At least it felt that way. But, you know, you win how you win. And the Braves won all the games. So, yep. And then the Mets lost 2 out of 3 of the Pirates as well. Only game that they won, Kodai Senga pitched excellent. So that was kind of basically the one highlight this week, other than Francisco Alvarez getting it back together after a brief cold stretch and going back to hitting dingers. He hit 4 dingers this week. It's a bad time overall right now. And to add injury to insult from the Braves series, Pete Alonso is now on the injured list because he got hit by a pitch in one of the Braves games by Charlie Morton, and he has a bone bruise and a wrist sprain, and the lineup looks really bad without him in it. Just really bad.
This is how it goes, the Mets are already bad. We're all miserable, and then the universe is like, oh no, you thought you were miserable before, and then they just pile on.
How many of these midseason injuries to David Wright did we live through? How many?
So many.
Lots. Like, so we know what we're facing here.
I know, but it's still not fun.
No. Like, you thought this was rock bottom?
And that's why you were reading and I was playing on my phone. Remember? And that's why we have Allison here to represent us appropriately. I will watch the Mets again someday, I promise.
Someday, yes.
Someday, not now.
Soon. I might bizarrely watch them play the Yankees because I'm just weird that way.
Ugh, I hate the Subway Series.
I hate the Subway Series.
I do too, but I also, like, I could use a good hate watch right now.
Also, like, the Yankees are also bad, so, I mean, mostly because it's a Mets-Yankees series without Pete Alonso and Aaron Judge. That's kind of terrible content, to be perfectly honest.
This is always the Yankees, though. They start out bad, then all of a sudden get hot, and then you look up, and they're, like, right there.
Oh, they're gonna make the playoffs definitely end up, again.
Like, yeah, they'll, like, win the division or something crazy like that, because they just always do.
But then the Mets...
Nope.
They start bad and then just stay bad.
Hey, to be fair, we might get good enough that they don't make any significant moves at the deadline.
True. I don't trust Epler to handle a deadline, so I'm okay with that.
Yeah, no, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, there are already rumblings. Not rumblings, there's like articles being written, like, should the Mets sell? And I mean, like... maybe, but like, I don't trust Billy Epler to sell either. And also, like, as we've said over and over on this podcast, the National League is a pile of garbage. The Mets can still pull a 2022 Phillies and just like squeak into the playoffs and then get hot at the right time. It's been known
to
happen.
They're tied with the Reds right now. They're tied with the Cincinnati Reds.
Well, yeah. The other thing is they're just not built to sell. I mean, no. I guess you'd probably try to, like, trade Scherzer and maybe Verlander if he could, like, throw one good pitch.
Verlander and his 4.85 ERA.
Woo! Reigning Cy Young champ, baby. I mean, like, look, right I know he is extremely frustrated by it as well. Like, I don't hold any particular grudge against him as a person, but, like, yikes. It's not what you want.
It's really bad.
And so, I mean, I just feel like, what are the kinds of pieces that get moved at the deadline? And they don't have any of those. Like, those are all the pieces that aren't going well for the Mets right now, is like their bullpen and their bench and their DH spot. And like all the players that are even like worth trading are also worth keeping. So, oh, well,
I mean, it's basically David Robertson. That's basically,
yeah.
They could sell David Robertson at the deadline. That David Robertson got traded at the deadline last year for, you know, a nice return. And it could, so they could do that, but that's really about it. That's the only, like, and if Ottavino pitches like a little better, like, he could also be similarly valuable.
I mean, I don't want to put this out into the universe, but in theory, you could trade Pete Alonso and then sign him after the season.
Ew. Also,
I don't think they would do that though.
No, I think it would break Pete's heart, honestly.
Well, and I think also that's the kind of thing where, like, I think Steve Cohen is a very cutthroat person, but also he wants to control a situation, and trading away your, like, hometown, I mean, not really hometown, but like homegrown star player, like, doesn't look like a guy who has control. And I feel like he would not want to do that.
And like, you want, in theory, you want to extend Alonso. And so, like, that kind of like kills all the good vibes on any extension. Not that they're talking right now, but like,
right.
It would really lessen the chances that would happen, and I don't think that the Mets want that.
Although a healthy Pete Alonso would be like a monstrous trade deadline piece.
Yes,
yeah.
I mean, he would instantly become the most valuable, assuming that Ohtani is not moved. Alonso would instantly become the most valuable available player.
Yeah,
I mean, that is what the Mets should do if they're at all serious about competing this year and possibly next year as well. Is just get Ohtani like. Immediately send a charter plane for him right now.
I mean, like, get on the plane, man.
The free agency outlook after him looks incredibly bleak. So that's the other issue, is like, there's no way to solve this long term. And now that Beatty and Alvarez and Vientos have graduated from the farm, they have like a bottom five farm system now. They have one pitcher of value in that farm system, Mike Vassell, who just got promoted.
Kind of amazing. There's one.
Yeah. Mike Vassell just got promoted to AAA. So like he is a guy who could potentially have an impact this year or next year. But that's
shouldn't
about
Matt Allen be coming back from Tommy John?
I mean,
sometime in
what
the
is
future?
This like his third major elbow surgery in like 2 years or whatever?
From Complex to Queens, answer this question for us.
Yeah, like I
crossover.
I don't count him as anything at this point, sadly. And yeah, I mean, other than that, it's just really Ronnie Mauricio whose ankle is hurt right now, so they don't have reinforcements coming. And they, yeah, this is it. They either have to buckle up and start playing better, or I don't know. And Steve Cohen, related to the like not trading Alonso because of, you know, the Mets playing poorly, Steve Cohen basically already run on the record with the New York Post, like saying that he's not going to act rashly in firing Buck Showalter or whatever. He's just not that type of guy. And I think that that is ultimately the right decision. Like, I'm not saying that Buck has done a good job managing this year, but I just don't see what firing him changes anything. It's not going to fix anything. And also, I think that the Mets really want, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, about bringing Stearns on to be president of baseball operations for next year, and potentially him bringing Craig Counsell along with him, who is a very coveted managerial candidate. So I think that the Mets don't want to ruin any of that goodwill by like mid-season firing their respected veteran manager. I don't think Craig Counsell and David Stearns are going to look at that and see an organization that they want to be a part of. So,
because it looks like someone who doesn't have control over the situation.
Exactly. So I think we're just kind of stuck in this holding pattern with the Mets playing really terrible baseball, unfortunately.
But if the pattern holds after Buck leaves, the Mets should win the World Series.
Yeah, true. If Buck's pass is the indicator, then the Mets are 1 year away from a World Series. So maybe there's that. So roster moves the Mets have made in the past week.
Or as we call it, rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Correct. Luis Guillorme is back on the team since Alonso's on the injured list. So that's a thing now. Tommy Hunter and Steven Nogosek were both designated for assignment. Zach Muckenhern was optioned back after being called up, basically pitched one game, pitched bad, got optioned back. John Curtis and Josh Walker have been recalled. Maybe my dude will do something this time. Who can say? Safe to say my dude has been a failure this year, but so far, but maybe he'll turn it around.
He has the energy coming his way. It's going to turn around for him.
I'm rooting so hard for him.
I feel like full disclosure, I didn't watch. I just saw people complaining. I feel like the last Pirates game was like the perfect encapsulation of everything going wrong. Like, Buck pinch hit Luis Guillorme for Mark Vientos, and he struck out on a pitch clock violation.
He did.
Oof.
Can you get any more Metsy?
Yeah, I mean, like, people are mad about that. Don't get me wrong, don't strike out on pitch clock violation, but like, people were mad about the decision. I'm not like I get it. Luis Guillorme is not a very good hitter, but like, Mark Vientos has not been very good either. And people keep complaining about like his inconsistent playing time being the reason for his struggling. And like, he hasn't played every day since Pete Alonso got IL'd, but he's been playing a lot more and he hasn't really done anything with it. So like,
yeah, it's been a couple weeks now. Even before Pete was hurt, I feel like he was starting to be in the lineup more often.
Yeah, and it's just been, he hasn't been good. And today the Mets signed Luke Voit to a minor league contract. And I have a feeling that if he does anything at AAA Syracuse, Mark Vientos' days on the big league roster might be numbered for the time being. More deck chair shuffle.
Rearranging. The only contribution I have to the Luke Voigt discourse is I was at a game when they were playing the Brewers and he was on the Brewers, and the points bet of the game or something was how many buttons he would have unbuttoned. So I forget how many the person said in the stadium, and then Luke Voigt unbuttoned his whole jersey.
Incredible. I love that so much.
So he did like play up to the crowd and had fun with it. So I'm like, okay, he seems kind of fun. But
yeah, no, that, Luke Voigt does have fun vibes.
Yeah. But other than that, I think he's bad.
Someone pointed out, and I'm not sure, I cannot confirm this through research, but someone pointed out that they think that Luke Voigt might be one of the players that like Tommy Pham has weird beef with. Unclear.
Uh-oh.
I mean, we know about the Jock Peterson situation. Yeah. We know about that, but like Tommy Pham has kind of a short fuse and can get weird about certain things. And so apparently he and Luke Voigt don't get along. Unclear. If that's
I think Tommy Pham should just be the DH.
He probably should. I mean, he's actually playing well. He's like one of the few hitters hitting right now. It's basically like him and Alvarez who have been hitting for the past like week or so. Other guys have been up and down kind of. Pride Month Marcana, although he has cooled off a little bit. He basically had the one good game in the one game the Mets won. This week, Marcana drove in like four of the Mets' five runs or something.
Didn't he get one of the three hits from yesterday too?
Yeah, I think he might have.
He's showing up to work.
Yeah. So there's been inconsistencies, but yeah, Tommy Pham has been good for like a few weeks now. He should probably just DH. They are not getting anything out of Vientos. They are still not getting anything out of Vogelbach, and yeah, I don't know. It would be fun, even though Vogelbach has been stinking up the joint, it would be fun aesthetically to have the, like, DH platoon Voigt Vogelbach, like, the two large beefy men on opposite platoon side.
I like the symmetry.
Yeah, it's fun. I like that. It's bleak. Stuff's bleak. I have two small like silver linings as I grasped at straws while I was doing the show notes to find something positive to talk about when it comes to the Mets. One of them is that Edwin Diaz posted another new picture of him progressing in his rehab. He posted a picture of him like doing squats on the blood flow restriction training machine, which when I saw the like, because everybody was just like reposting the picture like, look, he's doing squats. I immediately saw the BFR cuff on his leg and I was like, I'm getting PTSD.
I definitely know like three people who have had various leg surgeries who are like, yep, I know that one.
Yep. It's so for those of you unfamiliar with physical therapy for horrific knee injuries. And other types of injuries too. This is a fairly common thing. Blood flow restriction training, which is also something that bodybuilders do, is a way to like work your muscles really hard to build muscle without bearing a lot of load on the affected joint or leg or arm or whatever. Because when you're still like relatively soon removed from surgery, you can't lift heavy weights. Like my knee would have simply buckled. I wouldn't have been able to handle it, but you still want to build that quad strength. So what you do is you basically put a giant blood pressure cuff on your leg above the knee on the quad muscle, and it squeezes you like a blood pressure cuff, and it doesn't stop squeezing. It gets tighter and tighter and tighter, and you have to do exercises like that. And it is so uncomfortable. It's not painful per se, but it's just like, yeah, like imagine if you were getting your blood pressure taken and the cuff just kept squeezing and they made you like bench press like that. Ooh. That's exactly what it's like. It's really difficult and it's not fun at all, but it works.
And that is, I suppose, the most important part.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So
but I just kind of feel bad that he's you know, putting in all this work, and you know he's determined to make it back this season, and I don't think it's gonna matter.
Yeah, like at this point, you see all those pictures, and he's working so hard, and you're like, Edwin, what's the point?
Yeah, just take your time.
Just chill.
It's too late. Yeah, take care of yourself, man.
I don't know. It would be fun to get a narco this year, but
yeah, I think that's probably also part of the bad vibes. It's just the fun factor has gone way down.
Oh yeah, for sure. Way down. And now like I would argue that the two like most fun players on the team, although like Francisco Lindor like kind of rounds out the trio. And Starling Marte. But two of the most fun players on the team are Edwin Diaz and Pete Alonso, and now they're both hurt.
Yeah.
And Lindor is also not playing very well. And that makes the fun less fun.
He's been better the past week. But yeah, it's overall the season has not been very good.
The only thing that's salvaging anything right now is Alvarez.
Yeah, pretty much. It's pretty protect much the him at all costs.
Wrap him in bubble wrap or do whatever you have to. And send him to the All-Star game. I think that would be good for him.
I was going to ask, like, who's the Mets All-Star at this point? Because it was going to be Pete Alonso.
Yeah,
it's gotta be. Yeah. I guess, but like Sean Murphy is like popping off and like, I don't know.
I have a question. Would you want to see Alvarez in the Home Run Derby?
Yes. I think it would be fun. Yes, yeah. He would hit such monster freaking dingers in the Home Run Derby.
I think everybody would feel a lot better after that.
Yeah.
Because I'm feeling sad that we're probably not going to get to see Pete Alonso.
No, Pete. I know. And that's like Pete in his glory. That's what he lives for.
Literally Pete Alonso in his element. Like Pete Alonso was built for the Home Run Derby. He was designed in a lab for the Home Run Derby. And we're not getting that content this year. Simply inexcusable. Yeah. I hate it. Thanks. Way to make 2023 even more cursed than it already was. Like, please. This is the one thing that we had to look forward to.
But, like, I want him in, like, a Rocky-style, like, montage training Alvarez for it.
I know. Oh, I need it so bad. Oh, that would be so good. Oh, that would be so fun. Yeah, that'd be good. So, yeah, I think there's an outside chance Alvarez makes the All-Star team. It's tough, though, because he hasn't been up the whole season. And there's Sean Murphy and others that are killing it at the catching position. Other than that, like, it's really just like, I think personally that Brandon Nimmo should make the All-Star team, but he's not going to. But
Robertson probably could.
I think Robertson has a shot.
Yeah.
Robertson has a shot. But he's actually not pitched very well lately. Like, he's pitched good, but not great. Like, he had been great, and now lately he's just been okay, good. Fine. Yeah, he's starting to be a little human, which is fine. You know, it was gonna happen. His overall numbers are still excellent, but yeah, like, his All-Star case was like much, much better like 2 or 3 weeks ago. I still think that he has an outside chance of making it, and I think Brandon Nimmo should make the All-Star team, but
yeah,
he's not going to, because he's consistently underrated by everyone. But like, when I looked. The last time I looked at this, now, you know, he's kind of cooled off since I looked at this. When I looked at this the day the balloting opened, whenever that was. But I looked it up, and the only NL outfielders at the time with a higher FWAR than Brandon Nimmo were Juan Soto, Mookie Betts, and Ronald Acuña. That's it. That's the list. And those three are guaranteed All-Stars.
Well, and he's also, I mean, he's added so much value on the field this year, too. I feel like every year he just gets better and better out there, which, like, age-wise should not be the case. And yet there's Brandon Nimmo, like, killing it.
And, like, worth noting, too, like, Kodai Senga pitched really well in the only game the Mets won, and Mark Canha drove in all the runs, so they were kind of the two MVPs of the one Mets win this week. But a low-key MVP of that game was Brandon Nimmo, because he made at least one run, probably two run saving catch in, like, the bases were loaded in the second inning. The bases were loaded with two outs, and I think it was Connor Joe hit one like to the warning track, like I thought it was a grand slam off the bat. And I was like, well, there goes this game too. I thought it was a grand slam off the bat, and Brandon Nimmo did one of his like leaps against the wall. I don't think it would have gone out actually if he hadn't caught it, but it would have gone off the wall for a double, and it probably would have cleared the bases. But instead the inning was over, and then Kodai Senga went on to give up zero runs. So that's another thing that Brandon Nimmo has been so amazing at this year. He's already made like three or four fantastic catches, including a home run robbing catch, very, very eerily similar to the Justin Turner one from last year. So, yeah, I think Brandon Nimmo should be an all-star, but I'll get off my soapbox about that because I feel like the Mets, us Mets fans have no right to be demanding anything, right?
No.
And I would be happy to just attend.
Yeah, they're like, if they're angry at the team, they're probably not motivated to vote. So
yeah, that's sad. That is true.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the like my friend who is a Phillies fan texted me and was like, do the Braves have some sort of ballot stuffing operation going on for the All-Star game? And I looked, and like every position, like the Braves are winning, basically.
Because they're playing well. So when you're talking about well. The team.
I was like, A, they do like a very good coordinated campaign every year. B, their fans are insane. C, and I mean that like both positively and negatively, I guess. And C, like they're good. And D, Ronald Acuña is going to win the MVP. So, yeah. Anyway, must be nice. The other like small silver lining is an update on Maggie's walk-off win.
Yay!
From a recent podcast. We were talking about how, you know, we were sad about Shay moving on, and we were going to miss Shay so much because we love him and he's super cute, but obviously he's going on to be an actual service dog, which is awesome. But we were hoping, like, please don't leave us hanging, Mets, like have a successor for Shay right away. And the Mets answered our call. There is a successor to Shay, and his name is Seaver, and he's a black lab puppy, and he's freaking cute as hell, and I'm so
he's
excited.
A real cute puppy.
He is. I want to snuggle the puppy.
He is like cover of Puppy Magazine.
Yeah, like Hallmark Channel puppy cute.
And like the little blep. Oh my god.
Oh, the little blep and his little paws on the dugout railing.
Yeah. When it showed the player snuggling because he was there with Shay, and I was like, oh, Shay's passing the baton.
It was so cute. So I'm like, at least if there's no other reasons to go to Citi Field this year, there is one, in that maybe you will get a chance to pet Seaver and your life will be changed forever.
Yeah, we need to keep the streak going since we saw Shay. Now we have to see Seaver.
Yeah. So at least, if nothing else, the Mets have Seaver and he's so cute. So please just show him like one shot of him at least every game broadcast, because otherwise I don't know how I'm going to make it through these games. Like,
I'm going to go with inning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Per inning, actually.
You're like, don't even show the score bug. Just have like a GoPro on Seaver and just have that in the corner instead of the score bug.
Would
I
watch.
Mean, could we just, can they just replace all of the Mets games with just like Seaver footage?
Yeah. Seaver cam.
Seaver cam.
Remember puppy cam?
Puppy cam.
Yes. Seaver cam. Oh my god, I lost so many hours of my life to puppy cam.
We need Seaver cam.
I mean,
we need it now.
Yeah, we demand Seaver cam meds.
Please, please, please hear our call.
I've just sold my car.
All right.
Got a quote in 30 seconds from We Buy Any Car. Drove to my local branch in 13 minutes. And cash is getting sent to my bank.
Oh, nice.
Just sold my car to We Buy Any Car. Just sold my car
to We Buy Any Car. To find out how much your car's worth in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at WeBuyAnyCar.com. Admin fee may apply. For more information, visit WeBuyAnyCar.com/info.
This week on Get Hench,
we're talking to top athletes about how they remain at the top.
Hey, Sergey! Wait up! Sergey!
Carl, why are you here?
I saw you run out of the house. What are you doing?
I'm running. Yeah, but what are you running from?
The cops.
No, I'm running and listening to our podcast.
You're going to need a better alibi than that, bro. I'll get your passport, and I know a guy who can get us a car. After that, we're on our own.
No, I just want to listen to my podcast.
Don't wombat it, meerkat it.
Simples.
In our baseball segment this week, we have a few sort of quick hits to talk about. The first one being the sort of this was like a worldwide event, or at least a nationwide news event that affected baseball in addition to everything else. The wildfire smoke that had blown down the East Coast from Canada caused the postponement of some East Coast games last week, including the Nationals, where I live in D.C. The weather was really bad. Same in New York. The smog was awful. The air quality was terrible. It caused a postponement of the Yankees game because the Yankees were playing at home. Unfortunately, A, they didn't act really quickly on that. They kind of waited until the last minute when everyone was like, Seriously? And then they still played a doubleheader the next day when the air quality was like a little better, but still pretty shitty.
It was still like solidly in the do not go outside unless you absolutely have to category.
And they played two full baseball games in those conditions.
I did not go out in that at all.
Which is just
pretty
unconscionable.
I wore a mask when I went out.
Yeah, I had to go out for reasons that I'm going to talk about in my walk-off win. But I had to go out, and so, but I wore a mask. And so, yeah, it's just unconscionable to do this. The NWSL canceled the Spirit game. Like all the other leagues got the memo, and MLB kind of didn't.
Such an easy, it's such a layup. Like, it's bad weather. You cancel for bad weather all the time.
Right.
If it was raining a lot, then they would cancel. But raining smoke is like, meh, seems normal.
It's like,
well, and I feel like they did the same thing a few years ago in California. Like, the Giants were playing, and it looked like this guy in New York City where it was bright orange. And everybody was like, I'm pretty sure this is not safe right now. And I feel like, since we have ways of measuring air quality, if it reaches a certain point, just cancel the game.
Yeah, like, it's really easy to just be like this is a quantifiable thing. So it's very easy to be like, if the air quality index reaches this number, you don't play this. You don't play this outdoor sport. It's one thing if you have roof.
Yeah, you're just encouraging other people to sit there for 3 hours. So it's not just the players. You have 30,000 people sitting there breathing in this air.
Exactly. It's insane. The Brooklyn Cyclones also played, by the way.
They
didn't cancel any games.
That was kind of the worst of it that afternoon, too.
Yeah.
That was when, like, you were just walking around the city and you couldn't see. Like, it just could not see.
I was feeling really sick that day, and I was inside, but, like, since people kept coming in and the doors kept opening, I kept breathing the air coming in, and I felt really sick by the end of the day, and that was me sitting inside.
And the minor leaguers don't have as good a health insurance as the major leaguers, and they're out here playing in these hazardous conditions. Basically, that's like smoking a pack of cigarettes.
Ugh.
Like, I would say that you'd think we would have learned something from the COVID-19 pandemic about public health precautions, but, like, we clearly didn't. So this is just par for the course, I guess. Like, please. So MLB should be better about that. They should just, like, this should teach us a lesson that we should just set a number for if the air quality gets above this number, don't play.
And considering how things are going, you're going to deal with this a lot more often, especially in California.
Exactly. Climate change is going to mean that this is only going to get worse. It's not going to go away or get better. It's just going to keep happening, and it's going to be worse. Like, we talk about the effects of climate change a lot when it comes to, like, putting roofs on stadiums because of, like, increasing extreme weather, like, as far as, like, hurricanes, rain, like, storms, and that sort of thing. But we don't talk a lot about this, which is, like, increased wildfires, which is also the result of climate change. And causing like these conditions in places that haven't previously dealt with it. Like California was talking about how like, oh, why is this suddenly news is happening on the East Coast? We dealt with this all the time. It's like, yes, that's terrible that you guys deal with this a lot, but like it is a noteworthy thing and it's news that this is happening in new places.
Yeah, and both sides of it.
If they started getting nor'easters, if they were getting nor'easters in the Northwest, we would be super extra concerned about that too. Because like, it's not good anywhere, man.
It's like when the South gets snow and ice, they're not used to dealing with it. Like you can in the Northeast, we can be like, ha ha ha, they have two snowplows, they can't like, but it's an actual emergency for them because they don't have the resources or the equipment to deal with it. They aren't used to it. And this is going to start happening everywhere in the sense that there are going to be extreme weather events of all types in places that aren't used to dealing with those particular weather events. And so and MLB stadiums are going to be affected by this because baseball is a sport that is played outdoors. All future stadiums should have roofs on them. It just like, listen, I don't enjoy watching baseball in a roof covered stadium either. I've been to the Rogers Center when the roof was closed. It wasn't that nice, but like, that's the world we live in now. Sorry. It stinks, but that's the way it is. Unless you want games that have to keep getting canceled. Like, it's the only solution, really.
Try to have a mega billionaire own the team so he will pay for a retractable roof. And then when you can breathe the air, it could be open.
Yeah.
And also now a treat. We don't even get like spring anymore. It stays cold until June.
We did have a very nice spring this year.
I think we did discuss it a couple.
And you know what? I will say, like we discussed it a couple weeks ago, spring has persisted. That was part of why I was so mad about the smoke because like
it was actually beautiful out.
It was.
It should have been a like perfect spring open windows kind of days and instead I was running the air conditioner like a sucker.
But then even like when I was in my car, it was pulling the air from the outside. I was like, oh my god, I can't breathe.
It was not fun, but
and I was like, it's supposed to be a sunny day, yet it's completely cloudy outside and the sun looks like the eye of Sauron.
It was quite apocalyptic, like the vibes.
It really was eerie. I had to work until 7 o'clock. And when I was driving home at 7 o'clock, nobody was out. It was this really eerie apocalyptic feeling.
What was really funny, I guess not funny, but like the kids were so much more relaxed about it. Cause like they don't know that a sky can be wrong. But like we have 30 plus years of sky experience and can be like, this sky is wrong. And they're just like, huh, different sky.
Yeah.
So
just,
yep.
Oh, smells like campfire. S'mores.
It did smell kind of nice.
Yeah.
If it wasn't like the death smell, it would have been very pleasant.
Yeah. So speaking of the Rogers Center, we have a Blue Jays point to discuss, which is that the Blue Jays made the utterly baffling decision to have Anthony Bass catch a ceremonial first pitch thrown during Pride weekend. We talked about Anthony Bass a couple weeks ago on the show and his latest, undertakings online, I guess, aka posting of very hateful things about queer people. But then before that whole thing could happen, they designated him for assignment.
But I also like from the very it almost seemed inevitable that would be the kind of like dumbass like resolution to the situation they come up with. They're like, we'll have him throw out the first pitch. I even thought about like making a joke tweet, but I couldn't get it phrased just right. And then they went and just tweeted it out. And that was wild. It's really one of those things where like, you know, you're in the middle of, hey, there's no bad ideas in a brainstorm. And you get to that one, you're like, whoo, bad idea. Yeah. But they didn't get to that part where they realized it was a bad idea.
No. And like, of course, all the all the people who are, you know, on his side about this are saying that he was like, you know, he was DFA'd because he was canceled by the woke mob or whatever. No. He was DFA'd because he pitched like shit. Let's be clear.
He was canceled by like being bad at baseball.
By being bad at baseball. Like this, the Blue Jays DFAing him has nothing to do with his shitty online behavior and his bigotry. No. They would keep a bigot on the team if he was pitching well.
Because they gave him multiple platforms, too. They kept trying to, you know, reform him.
They were actually going to have him throw out the first pitch.
Yeah, like, they like intended to do this. To be like, nobody look, came he's to good their
right
now.
Minds. You know, on a political sense, it was just, just sheer luck that made this not happen.
Yeah, the whole thing is absolutely insane. And Caitlin McGrath in The Athletic wrote an excellent piece about the Anthony Bass situation, which you should check out. And we will post in the show notes and the tweets, etc., about how the way that they handled this basically like failed the LGBTQ community because it was just a debacle from the start. It was just like it was a clown show, basically. And, you know, the fact that this article appears in The Athletic is noteworthy because
speaking of
we learned today that The Athletic laid off like how much percent of their staff? It was like it's
20%.
20%.
Yeah, it was 20 people or 20%.
I can't remember.
Something.
A significant portion of their staff, including like pretty much all the like team based beat writers that aren't in the like big markets, more or less, like, which, you know, feel shitty, like, you know, from a Mets fan perspective, it's like, oh, our beats are safe because we're a New York team. But like, it's shitty because, you know, the small markets don't have as many beat writers to begin with. And now all of them are getting laid off.
Because one of the things that if this show had been going on when The Athletic started, we would have made a point of is that the guy who founded The Athletic said in an interview out loud, printed in black and white, that his goal was to wipe out local sports beat reporting.
Yep.
Like, yeah. Explicitly, like, he wanted to end that industry and absorb it completely into The Athletic. And that's just what happened. I mean, it's not like The Athletic is the only reason that those smaller beats shut down. Like, it's been a larger trend in journalism for a while. But, like, that's what happened. It's like Walmart moving in and, you know, buying out all the small businesses or like running them out of town and then raising their prices and doing what they do. I mean, yeah. They actively tried to destroy a part of the industry and it worked.
And it worked. It's like, and it followed the exact blueprint of shitty venture capitalist journalism that we've come to get used to in other, like in other areas of media. I mean, we will be candid and make no mistake about it that the same thing has happened at Vox. And that's why we're no longer, you know, this podcast is no longer part of SB Nation, is no longer part of Vox. You know, Vox just had the same thing where they laid off a bunch of people. And then, you know, The Athletic started as like this whole like, we're going to shake up the industry, like injecting a bunch of capital into the industry and poaching all the beat writers because The Athletic could pay them more than their local paper. And then
and
they
it was
got
like an amazing all-star team, especially at the beginning.
Yes.
At the beginning, it really felt like every single person on that list was like a rock star in baseball reporting already.
I mean, it was so much so that why I'm joining The Athletic became a meme.
Yeah.
Like that became a meme. Like everyone was saying like, why I'm joining The Athletic. Like that was like a meme because they were poaching so many good baseball writers that we all follow.
Probably the health insurance.
Yeah.
I mean, that's they offered the sense of stability. An investment in the people. You know, there was a reason that they all went to The Athletic. And there's a reason a lot of them are still there.
Yes.
Like, it is, compared to many, a, like, livable place to work in sports reporting. But, like, compared to many. Like, it's the lowest bar on the planet.
Yeah. So, like, step one was this venture capitalism where the, you know, they inject a bunch of money. They are able to pay their writers more. Step two, get bought out by the New York Times, like, at a profit. Like, make your profit by selling to the big, big newspaper. And then the big, big newspaper makes the cuts because they don't actually care about this stuff. Because they're the New York Times.
Well, then their reasoning made no sense. They're like, we're laying off a bunch of local beat reporters because we want to focus more on local reporting. And it's like, but that makes no sense. You just got rid of all your local. Like, how are you going to focus on local reporting?
No, they have like two writers left. How are they going to come up with something that makes sense?
Yeah. Like, don't try to sell me some bullshit. I see right through you.
Now, like, I'm going to let my subscription run through. And I don't know. I really, like, I love a lot of the reporting that they do. But I just feel like this model is so, it's just so vile.
Yeah. It's, yeah, it's gross. I feel the same way, Maggie. I'm like, I'm a subscriber to The Athletic because there's a lot of stuff that they, a lot of good work that they do that you can't really get anywhere else. But, like, how long do I feel like, how long before it becomes too icky for me to support this?
We need,
like,
an athletic defector.
Yeah. But yeah, where do you, like, go? The local newspapers are all laying their people off. Like, we saw some of SB Nation, they just flat out shut down a lot of their blogs.
It would have to be a collective. I mean, that's why defector is the one that came to mind. Like, it would have to be some sort of, yeah, some kind of co-op model. I don't know. There just has to be someone who is crazy enough to try to make it work.
Yeah. I feel like Podcast Dad would be a good guy to get on this.
Yeah, he doesn't have enough to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he created this network.
we, you know, in addition to, like, saving our podcast and a bunch of other SB Nation orphaned podcasts, we are only simply putting saving sports journalism on his plate. Good luck with that, Podcast
Dad. No big.
Thanks.
Anyone can do it.
I mean, defector is really the ideal model, like, for quality journalism these days, right? But, like, the only reason defector is even able to work is because they had a built-in, like, very, very dedicated subscriber base from the start. It's very hard to recreate that. And I'm not sure if another venture similar to it would be successful, because defector is just a very special case. But it is, like, their model is the way, right? The way you don't get what has happened to The Athletic and Vox and all these other digital media companies. It's shitty. With that, I'm going to shout out another piece in The Athletic, because, again, this is the type of stuff that, you know, and it's like a lot of topics that we cover on this podcast are the type of stuff that, like, only The Athletic is writing about, or only local newspapers are writing about. Right. Like the story that we talked about, for example, with first of all the, like, all the sexual harassment stories connected to the Mets.
Say, like, you could list them on your fingers.
All the sexual harassment stories connected to the Mets. Like, that was all athletic coverage. Was all, like,
Rick Rioli, the David Newman story, Mickey Callaway.
All of that was The Athletic. Not to say it wouldn't have come out any other way, but, like, they're the ones that took the time to really cover it and speak to
victims. Well, they picked up stuff that was not recent that no one else had. So I don't know that all of it would have come out.
Right.
Well, and also beat reporters have to worry about access.
Yes. Yes. So, like, that's the type of thing that we talk about on this podcast that, like, you can't really get anywhere else. Similarly, like, a story that I flagged to talk about this week was about the AA Portland radio team, which is two women. Yay. And they're the second all-female broadcast booth in history. They made history. We talked about it on this show when they first announced it back in April that it was going to be, you know, another woman joining the lead play-by-play reporter or the lead play-by-play broadcaster, sorry. We talked about that on the show. And The Athletic did like a very deep dive into this booth and how they're doing this season, and like talked to both of them and like did a really good story about it. And this is the type of stuff that, you know, like a double A radio broadcast booth of two women, like this is the type of thing that, like, you know, mainstream media outlets, like big media outlets, don't often cover.
I don't still think, because a lot of human interest stories, they're not going to invest in that. They just want, the game scores, the game recaps, and, you know, are they going to fire Buck Showalter? But everything else is kind of, you know, just not necessary anymore. That's what it seems like.
Where else are we going to get our like 5 or 6 different articles listing out all the amazing and hilarious things Zach Greinke has done?
Yeah.
And that's not a complaint that there are 5 or 6 of them. They're all amazing and we need more of them. And The Athletic has always been the ones to deliver.
Exactly.
Yeah, like more Zach Greinke and Joey Votto stories.
Yeah. We love it. So it's a really sad day. I feel really sad about all the good journalists who lost their jobs today. I'm sure many of them will land on their feet somewhere else. But it's just, it's bleak. It's bleak in sports journalism right now. And like, to be frank, like, I tweeted about this, but like, there was a time, it was very brief and fleeting, but there was a time when I had applied to a bunch of stuff after I graduated from my PhD program, and like got rejected a bunch of times, was feeling kind of like, you know, dejected and like disillusioned with my chosen field. Like, I knew I didn't want to stay in academia, but I wasn't really getting jobs or like fellowships anywhere else. And so I was like, maybe I should just quit science altogether and write about baseball. And like, I almost like, I had filled out an application to a Mets like columnist job, and I thought about it, and I didn't end up doing it because I ended up getting another opportunity soon after that. But like, there was a time where I at least considered making this my full-time job. And I'm sad to say that today is one of those days where I'm really glad I didn't do that, because like, this is the landscape that's out there.
Yeah, when I first started writing for Mets Blog in 2013, a couple of different people in the industry like encouraged me to look into doing it full time. And in retrospect, how dare you?
Yeah,
really? What did I ever do to you guys? Come on, man. And I think honestly, if I asked either of them, like, if we could go back, would you also suggest that? I think both of them would be highly apologetic.
Right. And like, the only reason I'm able to still like to write about the Mets at Amazing Avenue, to do this podcast, is because I have another career. Like, that is the only reason I can do this, because like, the amount that we get paid for this, like, to be frank, is not enough to support ourselves. It's like, we do this because we love it.
Subscribe to our Patreon.
Yes, please. Yes.
Just like, side note, please, while you're listening,
please help pay us. Thanks.
You can pause if it's hard for you to listen and fill out the credit card information at the same time. You can pause it right here. We'll wait for you.
Yeah, be right here when you get back. Yeah. So like, for so many, and there's so many people, and this is why the sports writing industry is what it is, because most people who are underrepresented in the industry, whether it be women, people of color, queer folks, folks who don't have a ton of money, socioeconomically disadvantaged people, etc. Like, the reason why there's not that diversity in the industry is because like, those folks can't afford to take unpaid internships to break into the industry and things like that. They don't know like old school white dude beat reporters from, you know, from eras past. Like, that's not part of their social network. So like, how do you break into the industry? And like, you know, only people who like pretty much like don't rely on this for their day job are able to do it, or like people who get gigs at The Athletic and then eventually get laid off from them, like, right? So it's not good. It's sad. I'm sad about the state of journalism and media now. Obviously, particularly sports journalism, but this applies more broadly too. Yeah, it's not great. Another not great thing is that we've been following this story, mostly thanks to Jason Garcia, who is the main person covering this. He covers, like, he's an investigative reporter who covers, like, corporate influence in Florida. We talked about that bill that is happening in Florida that would exempt minor leaguers from the minimum wage laws in Florida that was pushed by Major League Baseball and by ownership groups. Ron DeSantis just signed that bill into law today.
And Ricketts gave him a nice donation to his campaign.
Yep. Cubs owner Joe Ricketts donated to Ron DeSantis's presidential campaign a hefty donation after he signed that bill. So
nice little quid pro quo there.
Yeah, you know where the moneyed interests lie here. Yeah, so it's crappy. It's shitty. At least the minor leaguers are unionized now.
It puts into perspective Steve Cohen financially backing Chris Christie.
Which is, yeah, that's something that we hadn't talked about on the show, but side note, that's a thing.
I mean, like, it's such a, what a nice little jaunt for him. Have fun.
Yeah. Chris Christie's running for president.
Wanted to get out to Iowa for a while? What's even happening there?
Chris Christie's running for president. He's being financially backed by Steve Cohen, and he's staying on the Mets, like, board of directors or whatever while he's
doing. Yeah, I love Martino tweeted that out, like, oh, him running for president won't interfere with his Mets duties. It's like, literally nobody was worried about this.
Don't worry, guys. Chris Christie is still carrying out his duties on the board of directors of the Mets.
Oh, I was really worried there for a minute. Yeah, but thanks, hold on, you guys, will he still be able to fulfill those duties when he's president? Sorry.
Martino always with his finger on the pulse of the people.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I guess, I don't know. I guess the takeaway from this is the owner of your baseball team is a shitty rich guy, too. All of them are.
They're all bad.
They're all bad. It's just a question of whether they're bad guys who will spend money on your team or not, or just be cheap about your team and also be,
and if they're
humans.
Bad, are they going to be using their money to support effective evil people like Ron DeSantis or actual clowns like Chris Christie?
Exactly. It's kind of like, yeah, whatever. That's relevant. I don't agree with the values or anything he stands for, but it's relatively harmless because he's never going to be president.
Yeah, like Cohen's just flushing his money down the toilet at this point.
It's like
never going to be president now.
Never going to be president now. It's like Steve, can't you use that money for, like, please one Shohei Ohtani, please, instead of Chris Christie's presidential.
I'm sure he stashed it in a side account.
I hope so.
Maybe it's stashed in a bathroom next to the toilet.
Chandelier.
My favorite was all the people tweeting about, like, new Zoom background just dropped. I personally could not get away with making that my Zoom background at work, but I sincerely hope other people do it.
Yeah. The chandelier.
It's perfect.
The chandelier made of plastic. That
it's,
thing was.
It's incredible.
Rough.
It's incredible.
And the candelabra on the wall.
How much lighting does one bathroom need?
Your gaudy chandelier was not enough lighting. So here's a gaudy candelabra to match.
Yeah. Oh, God. All right.
And a $10 Target curtain.
On that note, we will end the show this week like we always do with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Linda Cerevich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win, it's kind of a two-parter. My niece Emily had her finale for her dance recital yesterday. She's been doing this, I think, 5 years now. And this is the first year she finally, like, let go a little bit. Every time I went, you could always see her thinking about like her moves, and she was focused, and she's a lot like me. She hates making a mistake and then overthinks it. So, and that was always on her face. Like, she was just, I gotta get these moves down, gotta get these moves down. But then finally, she was just letting go, and she was smiling and having fun. And you could see it in her performance, like, completely different. I mean, I was always proud of her, because it's a scary thing to, you know, go out in front of, perform in front of a theater full of people. So just doing that is very brave. So, but to finally see her, you know, really enjoying it, you know, made me happier, feel happy for her too. So that was part one. And then part two was this poor little girl. She had to have been no more than 4 years old. You know, the little tykes come trotting out on the stage, and then she just starts screaming, "Mommy, I want my mommy." And then the lights come on, and then that freaks her out even more. She starts crying. So then
every parent listening to this is either thinking, "Aw," or "Oh." Thanks to an ill-advised flower girl situation, I'm in the latter category.
Oh no!
Oh, trauma, man.
So, yeah, so the teacher was, like, trying to dance with her and, like, you know, was trying. And then finally she, like, did one little toe tap, which, like, sent the crowd into, like, we all started cheering. And then that freaked her out even more. So then she started crying even harder.
Relatable.
So you can't win.
No. So she left. Then she came back out for her second performance, still crying, still screaming for her mom. But then finally the teacher, you know, was like holding her and like dancing with her. And then finally she started getting into it. And then the crowd cheered again. And I was like, oh no, what's going to happen? But then she kept dancing.
Aww,
I was
proud,
like,
of her.
Good for her. We were all so happy for her, because she was the star at the end of the day that stole everybody's hearts, because she was scared. She wanted her mom, but she stuck with it and she danced. So I don't know who that little girl was, but good for you.
Very relatable. I too do not like to be perceived.
No,
by
no.
anyone.
Because especially for the little ones, it's really scary. Yeah.
Well, sometimes the littles are, I mean, they don't like put up a little curtain at the front of the classroom. They will be blissfully happy.
I know.
It doesn't have to be a big thing for the littles.
For the little ones, I know. I know the parents want to see them and everything, but, you know, even I get scared in front of a room full of people. I can only imagine how that looks to a 3-year-old. But, you know, she, I'm still very happy. Like, I'm sure her mom years from now is going to be like, your first show, you were crying the whole time.
Yes, that's going to be a good story for
it
later
is,
in
yeah.
her life. Especially if she, like...
Or say,
especially...
remember my first recital? It was great. And mom will say, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I remember.
Sure was.
It was great.
Yeah, you got those moves at the end? Yep.
I remember it like it was yesterday.
But no, they were all very cute. And like this one group was dressed up as bumblebees, and this other group was dressed up as puppy dogs. And if they're all just too cute. And so I'm glad that, you know, Em is doing it and has found something she loves to do and is having fun with it. So proud aunt moment. Every year I like going and watching Em compete.
That's great. Awesome walk-off win. We love it. Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk-off win for this week?
It has been a slow week in the Wiggin household. And we already talked about the new Mets dog. So I would like to shout out New York City Parks Department. Because you
Excellent.
Know what? Day in and day out, they do an amazing job. This is a super dense city where almost nobody has outdoor space of their own. And taking care of the city's parks is a massive job. And they actually do a really good job at it, which is, of course, why Eric Adams wants to take away all their funding, because God forbid the city be good at anything.
Just like he took away libraries.
I was just thinking of it over the weekend, really getting some good post-death air playground time in. And like, you know, they did a redesign of like the splash pad in our local park recently, and they made it accessible. And it's just such a lovely place where like, you've got kids of all ages, like truly like literal babies in diapers, and like old people with walkers now going down the accessible ramp and like cooling themselves off. It's just, you know, for a city like New York, which can be heavily segregated sometimes and has some serious economic inequalities, the parks, especially around here, really serve as a meeting ground for everybody. And it's, you know, the kind of place where like, you know, we showed up and did not call a bunch of parents to see if they were going to be there with their kids. And lo and behold, they were all there just because that's where you go. It's this shared public space, and that's really special. And the Parks Department does an awesome job taking care of all of that. So thumbs up Parks Department, thumbs down Eric Adams. And that's my walk-off one.
We love our parks, don't we, folks?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry for stealing your thunder about talking about the Mets dog in the main show.
No, it's okay.
Something positive about the Mets.
Good for me. It was good for me to have to actually come up with something in my life other than dogs. I don't know.
But my walk-off win is also about dogs, so I'm not one to talk. But yeah, this is a walk-off win I've been holding in for like 3 weeks now, but I can officially announce it now. So my walk-off win is that Michael and I adopted a dog last week. Her name is Blue. After the Mets, of course. Our plan is to adopt an orange tabby and name him or her Orange, so that we will have the complete set of Blue and Orange. We love her very much. She has been the most wonderful addition to our family, and I'm so overjoyed. She's so cute. She's almost 7 months old now, and she's just an absolute joy to have around, and I'm so happy. The death of our cat last year was really, really hard. And we, you know, took a year to sort of just like process and have pet-free life for a while. And now that it's summertime and Michael's off work, it was the perfect time to bring a pet back into our lives. And so we have adopted Blue, and we love her. And shout out to Lucky Dog Rescue, DC in DC, technically based in Arlington, Virginia, I think. But DC area animal rescue, support your local animal rescue. They do such amazing work. Lucky Dog rescues like 50 animals a week from high kill shelters in the South, in the rural South. We think Blue came from South Carolina somewhere. And so, yeah, just amazing work saving these animals. And I couldn't imagine my life even just a week after we got her. I can't imagine my life without her in it. So, we're so happy, and excited, and we love our little girl. So yeah, that's my walk-off win.
Allison, I may call her Bluey. As a big Bluey fan,
that is
totally
fine. I may slip
and call her Bluey.
my best friend says that she looks like Scrappy Doo a little bit. And so I've been singing like our walk song is Bluey, Bluey, Blue. Where are you? We got some walks to do now after you see you. And I just heard her bang against the door, so she knows her song already. So yeah, she's here, because I've said her name so many times that she could probably hear it. So yeah, Bluey is totally acceptable because I've been doing it. Yeah. So she's gonna end up with lots of nicknames, I'm sure.
And we'll need lots of pictures get us through.
My Twitter account has gone from a Mets account to a dog account. Like, that transformation is already underway.
That's acceptable.
I can't imagine anyone complaining.
No.
If you don't already follow me on Twitter, you should follow me because I'll post dog every day. I won't post about the Mets much because they are depressing. Instead, I will post dog. So that you have that to look forward to if you follow me. But you know what you should do is you should go to homerunapplesauce.com and check out all of our podcasts. And you should, as we already talked about, Support our work on Patreon by going to patreon.com/homerunapplesauce. You can also follow Home Run Applesauce on the various social medias on Instagram and Twitter at @HRApplesauce. You can follow this show on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok at A Pod of Their Own. You can email the show aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at @PetitePhD, now a dog account. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Saravich.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
You can subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Just search Home Run Applesauce and you should find all of our shows right there. Please rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no I in podcast.